Thanks, Gene. So I'm going to take a little bit different approach here, at least as an experiment, so you guys are guinea pigs. So I do have slides as templates for talking points, but I was taking notes during the session and really wanted to kind of keep it more dynamic. At least that's my excuse. And we'll try this out. So anyway, I'm supposed to kind of give a wrap-up and talk about the science, the implementation of science, and some observations through the beef and dairy caps, and then observations from this morning. So again, I think Matt pointed out about these caps. This is an interdisciplinary research and extension team, large, and for reasons, they are complex, but I think it's really valuable, as hopefully the talks came out this morning, and I'll try to highlight. Matt, I think this was from our project. You listed the people involved, the range of people from animal scientists to agronomists. Michael, I really appreciate your focus on soils. But sociologists, and I'll mention that, economists, atmospheric scientists, you heard Jiming talk, climate scientists. So really a range of people, and that's the value of the caps. It makes it, they're supposed to be coordinated, but sometimes we feel like it's uncoordinated as well. But the impact and potential implementation, I think, is more valuable in that sense. And Gene, you're going to have to keep me on time, so since I'm pontificating. Yeah. Okay, so these were some of the objectives of the CAPS. I think they're of the CAPS in general. So one is institutional. Michael pointed out we're institutional building and building the next generation of scientists. But as Amber pointed out, too, we got to build the next generation of producers in that. Obviously, there's the scientific benefit to these systems as well. And then an important component is the extension outreach component. Okay, one thing I think that was really important on these caps, at least under the grazing and I think through the dairy as well, is that there was stakeholder involvement through the process and has been throughout. So as Amber pointed out, some of the surveys, you know, there's a much better understanding, I guess, for me as a soil scientist, even though I try to get out in the public. But the complexity of the operational management, maybe not too surprising, but I think there was surprises in there. And how we have to adapt, each producer has got their own management style. They just, Greg said they just deal with manure. They don't measure it, quantify it. And I guess being in Kansas, producers understand that climate change is happening, although they can't say the word climate change. Amber and I was on a project earlier, and they were saying all the things about climate change, but they just couldn't, because they've been taught or listened to certain news sources and information that climate change was a dirty word. But they're dealing with it, and they know that. And that was, so I think that's important, understanding how we convey that message and the scientific information in a way that they will accept. And that's where the sociologists come into play, and I'll bring that up again. You know, the growing cycles, there are looking at alternative crops. I think one thing that was key on these caps, and it isn't evident in Michael's project, no offense, Michael, but it's getting the information on the practices, but really the business side that a farmer producer is having to deal with. Most of these projects don't deal with, except under the caps, I think, or maybe primarily the caps, is really getting understanding of the business models of those producers, understanding the barriers that the farmers are having to do with, not only economically, but policy-wise, to some of those other issues. And I think that's the strength of the CAP. And then you heard Amber's rendition of some of the producers' attitudes and getting that information out. So I guess the value of the CAPS in that sense was to have that stakeholder involvement and active engagement with those producers. Did I lock up? Okay. All right. Okay, so I put the slide in here as just as a talking point. Basically, one of the things about the CAPS, and was, as Michael pointed out, is getting that baseline information on these systems and where are the gaps in that. And so it's a complex system. We've focused, can I do this? Yeah, okay. On the left-hand side, getting all the baseline information, the greenhouse gas data, management information for these complex systems. I probably would argue that these livestock systems are much, much more complex than a grain system because they're dealing with the crops, the soil management, and then the issues maintaining livestock as well as the products from that. And then, again, that came out in the discussion and my observations is that the CAPS really integrate the social and the economic and then the LCAs that you just heard from Greg, this component here working with that. So we're looking at the whole system, or trying to. One aha moment, there's a couple in here, but one is that some things that we didn't expect. This is methane uptake in our native prairie grazing systems. And what we saw was that by burning, instead of the routine practice is burning every year, you get actually better cattle gain on our native prairies in Kansas or in the Flint Hills region. But when we go to patch burning every 3 years, we get 30% more methane uptake. That's offsetting the emissions by the cattle. So it makes that system more sustainable. And so that was kind of an aha moment. Now we're penciling out how much offsets are we getting, but you know, I'm not saying it's going to be a grazing system to be carbon neutral, but we're tending to be that way. And we still get the weight gain, and we also get the biodiversity credits that benefits too, because it turns out that burning every 3 years, you get a more diverse, more resilient grazing system. So that was kind of an aha moment in that, and we still need to put that package together, but I think in the summary in this next year that we should be able to hopefully do that, right? Jermaine and Ali will be able to synthesize that and show that for that. And like Michael's presentation, we got to think of that, those packaging for the environmental footprint of these grazing systems. It's not just to produce meat or dairy or milk in that sense. I'll skip that. Okay, and then what Greg showed was the LCAs for both the dairy and grazing cap. This is just from our grazing cap. But I think getting that kind of information is really, really critical. One is putting these all these different disciplines together, from soils and agronomists to plant scientists to livestock people together, but then tie it together with the whole system is really critical. And Michael doesn't have enough land to look at all the different options. He's just got a mere 3 treatments, farmlets. But to look at all the different transportation, all the different management systems that a producer deals with is really key. And so we need those LCAs, both for to look at the environmental footprint or carbon footprint or whatever you want to talk about, but then look at all these different scenarios. And I was just, check my notes here. The dairy LCA, the differences between the New York and Wisconsin, not that New York was better, it had a lower carbon footprint, but you know, we don't want to say New York is better than Wisconsin, but maybe you want to, but I think the point was, what can we learn you know, it didn't include maybe the social aspects of that. Why is Wisconsin Dairy Farm 150 animal units, approximately?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. And why is New York, 1,000? But there's some social aspects of that are really critical, and so you can't say New York's better than Wisconsin. Maybe from the age, other aspects, we need to think about that, and we don't do that. And so that's, the CAPS have started that, but we haven't finished in that sense. And even on these livestock systems, I would argue we've had 5 years these CAPS with these variable weather cycles that we have. It probably needs to be a 10-year or 15-year project. Just because of the complexity of the systems. A 3-year burn cycle, we've only gone 1.5 through, a patch burn, and then we're in a wetter period if we had a drought in the middle of that, so really need to have even longer. So, USDA is confined to 5-year cycles, I think, for most part, legally or legislatively. Okay, and one of the other things on the LCAs, I think Michael pointed out, and I wish I had your slide, but if I took my notes, but we need to think about these livestock systems in all the services they provide, not only just the meat or dairy, but the hides, the wool, whatever else you had in your list there, but the biodiversity, particularly in our prairie or grazing systems, the biodiversity that wildlife habitat and things like that, whether patch burning, for example. The carbon capture, whether it's from soil or from methane, digesters and that. Nutrient strategies, I like your emphasis on looking at the vitamins and the omega-3s and 6s and whatever, and looking at that instead of just, meat, kilograms. Or calories. It should be protein and protein plus in that set. And then the integrated management, I lost my last point on that. And so I guess that will kind of help maybe combat was it Oxford University, the grazed and confused?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's part of the misconception. People don't understand the complexities of the system. So hopefully in discussion we can have some dialogue on that. So I'm just throwing out ideas here, hopefully to promote some discussion. 2 minutes, okay. And Matt said, forced collaboration. I'm not a very social person, and it's been painful to work with Amber. Working with a social scientist is different language, different concepts. But actually, it's been really rewarding in that sense. It's really stretched my mind, but stretched our team's mind in looking at all these issues. Why farmers don't adopt. Peter's been involved in extension, looking at farmer surveys, but then on the grazing cap, we also have consumer social scientists looking at consumers' perceptions and needs. And we need to tie those together in that. So I think that's one thing that the CAPS has forced us to do, but I think it's been really, really beneficial. Okay. These were just kind of templates in here to keep my thoughts going. But again, I think the implementation is the environmental footprint. You've heard about the decision-making tools. And then, again, that social scientist component. These are just some notes from our annual report, but I put it in here just to as talking points. It's really that the social context and the extension. It's gotten, I don't know about the dairy cap, but it's put together the Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas extension people together in a comprehensive way in talking about coordinated delivery programs as well. So we're all talking the same message. The political border stops between Kansas and Oklahoma, but the ecological and the farming systems necessarily don't. So with that, I just acknowledge the support, but really kind of wanted to start the discussion for this next 15 minutes or we have. and take advantage of Michael's attendance here. So, and you, so I'll direct all the questions to him.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Coach.
It's been a very rushed presentation, but I think we've captured some really important highlights from these two apps. It's been a treat working on this project. And this, you know, we were at the end of the schedule because they kept us to a really strict two-hour time limit, but I think our speakers are all available, and I hope many of you are, because we didn't have time to really engage in dialogue or questions. So any questions or comments from the audience? Yes?
About carbon footprint between Wisconsin and New York. I think our presenters explained that the sign on the rated car number about seven times greater in New York. Is there any other issue, I mean, difference?
Matt, I think this one's probably yours or possibly Greg's.
The climate is a little bit different. The not strictly from this study, but from other work, we see, for reasons that are not entirely clear, that the feed conversion to milk is generally better in larger dairies. Maybe associated with more concentrates associated with larger dairies and more grazing. So we know that ruminants have better FCR if they're on a more concentrated diet, if they starch, right? They don't have to work as hard to convert it. So that may be part of the explanation as well. I don't have any more detail than that, but they are different. They're managed differently, and there may be some differences in the manure management techniques.
I think Michael Lee would also like to make some comments on that.
So if I might, I was going to say some of the things, like, you know, is it milk and grass, and if the carbon sequestration has also been included in that calculation. And of course, this is one of the big arguments which we may be making, you know, that stoichiometrically in the rumen, if you're going to have an animal fall which provides more milk from grass, you're going to produce more methane because it goes down the acetate route in the rumen. Whereas if you've got stoichiometrically, you've got an animal which is consuming more starch to mate, goes down propionate, you're going to have less methane to make out of the rumen. You know, so that's mathematically biochemical pathway certainty. But again, the key thing is, and I think is the point saying, is not to say that Wisconsin is worse than New York because it is differential. That's so important. But I was just wondering, Greg, if the sequestration of carbon in the pasture had been included in the Wisconsin data set, or in the New York data set.
So the integrated farm system model does a crude. Not a really detailed, but it does account for soil carbon. It doesn't do a really good job of it because the integrated farm system model was developed to answer the question, how does variability of weather affect production in a dairy system? And when Al built the model, he built it to reset each year. So it doesn't keep track of year-on-year soil carbon. So it probably doesn't, I mean, it's in there a little bit, right? He does account it, but it's probably not really capturing what you're getting at.
But that hysteresis issue there, of course.
Right.
So that you just change what happened previously. It's a real complex one, I
think. Exactly. And so just by a number of us, as a result of the dairy cat, are beginning a project to build a continuous version of the dairy farming system model. So hopefully in 2 or 3 years we'll have another version that can answer different kinds of questions than the current version of this.
I think it would be really interesting, particularly in terms of the grazing cap or the beef and the bee cap, where you've shown that offset of carbon and methane of that land, is to then say, okay, well, what carrying capacity of that land or was that office that main thing?
Right, that's where
it was.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Yeah.
And Ali, I think that the APU model does have a continuous flow of carbon.
Yep.
So it can deplete or accrue carbon in the soil.
That's right. Yeah.
So, any more questions? We really have to clear the room for the next session here because people may be needing to get in. But I do appreciate it, and I want one more round of applause to thank all of you.